issue became universal, and there were reactions all over the world, especially from non-Muslim world.
He is talking about harsh words between Turkey and China over the latter's reported oppression of its Uyghur minority. It's Thursday, February 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, Australia announces that a government will reopen a controversial detention center for asylum seekers. The new U.S. Defense Secretary makes his first overseas trip this week, focusing on the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. All on today's VOA Asia. Turkish and Chinese tensions continue to escalate following Ankara's condemnation of Beijing's statement of its treatment of its Muslim Turkic Uyghur minority. The fallout of the dispute threatens to hit Turkey economically. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
China has issued a travel warning to Chinese residents and tourists visiting Turkey in a move seen as targeting Turkey's large tourism industry. The advisory is the latest escalation in bilateral tensions after Hami Aksoy, a spokesman for the Turkish Foreign Ministry, condemned China's treatment of its Uyghur minority. In a statement, Aksoy said 1 million Uyghurs have been arbitrarily detained and subjected to torture and brainwashing. Beijing swiftly shot back, calling the Turkish statement vile. Chinese officials called on Ankara to withdraw what they described as false accusations. The northwest Xinjiang region of China, home to most of the country's Uyghurs, has been under heavy police surveillance after years of ethnic tensions that have sometimes exploded into violence. The Chinese government calls its crackdown a counter-terrorism effort. In the past, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan advocated for the rights of Uyghurs, who are ethnically related to modern-day Turks, and the country often received Uyghurs seeking asylum. In recent years, however, analysts say booming trade with China became more of a priority for Erdogan and his government. Political scientist Cengiz Aktar comments.
They stopped talking about this burning issue, preferring economic relationship with this giant country.
Erdogan is a conservative Muslim and has been increasingly positioning himself as a defender of global Muslim rights. The Turkish leader regularly condemns Burma's treatment of Rohingya Muslims, and he is vocal in his support for the Palestinians. Analyst Aktar says the growing international condemnation of Beijing over its treatment of Uyghurs forced Ankara to speak out.
The issue became universal, and there were reactions all over the world, especially from non-Muslim world. So I think they felt simply compelled to react to it.
Election politics also is a factor, with Erdogan's AKP party competing in hotly contested crucial local polls next month. Analysts say backing the Uyghurs will play well among religious conservative voters. Analysts expect Beijing to impose further economic sanctions on Ankara, and the price Turkey will pay for standing up for the Uyghurs in China could be considerable. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
This is our invitation to you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, at voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories right now. The South China Morning Post and CNBC report Chinese President Xi Jinping will meet with U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Trade Representative Robert Leitzinger on Friday as both countries pursue a trade deal before an early March deadline. Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is set to make his first state visit to Pakistan on Saturday, where he's expected to announce investment projects worth up to $20 billion. The Thairaksa Chart Party petitions. Thailand's constitutional court says it never had a chance to defend itself. The party did after the election commission recommended the party be dissolved because its prime minister candidate was in conflict with the king as the head of state. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. In a landmark vote, Australian lawmakers have made it easier for sick refugees held offshore to be treated in the country. It is the first time in almost 80 years a government has lost a vote on its own legislation in the lower house of parliament. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Independent lawmakers, the Australian Greens and the opposition Labor Party, have joined forces to humiliate Australia's minority centre-right coalition government. The bill passed Tuesday in the House of Representatives by a single vote and was approved by the upper chamber, the Senate, on Wednesday. The legislation will give doctors a greater say on which refugees detained offshore can travel to Australia for medical treatment. Since 2013, Canberra has held asylum seekers arriving by boat in camps on the tiny Republic of Nauru and on Manus Island in Papua New Guinea in the South Pacific, and has insisted they would never be allowed to resettle in Australia. Doctors have said medical facilities on the islands are inadequate for about 1,000 asylum seekers and refugees who remain. The government had argued the new medical evacuation law would encourage more asylum seekers to try to reach Australia by sea, and that some would die during the voyage. Prime Minister Scott Morrison accused opposition politicians of weakening border security.
They are failing the test of duty to the Australian people, and they do it trying to kid themselves that this is being done in the name of humanitarianism. Well, I remind them that their humanitarianism, as supposed last time, led to child deaths. It led to the total destruction of our borders, and it took the strength again of a coalition government, Mr. Speaker. The people of Australia will remember this day and know that this is now on your head.
The Australian Navy has also, since 2013, been ordered to turn back migrant boats, a policy that critics say is illegal under international law. The government says its uncompromising policy has stopped a steady flow of migrant boats and saved lives at sea. Critics have argued Australia is turning its back on desperate people fleeing persecution. The passing of the legislation reopens old wounds in Australia's divisive debate about asylum seekers and immigration. It's an issue that will be prominent in the run-up to the next federal election, which is expected in May. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Meanwhile, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced Wednesday that the government will reopen a controversial detention centre for asylum seekers. This facility on Christmas Island, a small Australian territory in the Indian Ocean, located 2,500 kilometres northwest of the Australian city of Perth, was shut down just 4 months ago. The decision to reopen the facility comes after lawmakers earlier this week approved legislation that would allow doctors to send asylum seekers held on detention centers on the Pacific Island nations of Nauru and Papua New Guinea to Australia for medical treatment, as you just heard from Phil Mercer. It was the first time in decades that an Australian government lost a vote on its own legislation in the House of Representatives, where parties need a majority to form an administration. Prime Minister Morrison said the government is reopening the Christmas Island facility to handle a possible new wave of asylum seekers attempting to reach Australia by boat. He denounced the new law as an attempt by the opposition Labor Party to weaken Australia's hardline immigration policy, which sends asylum seekers to either Nauru and Papua New Guinea and bans them from resettling in Australia. Happening now in Asia, an award-winning Philippine journalist and founder of an online news site that has clashed repeatedly with President Rodrigo Duterte was arrested Wednesday by government agents on libel charges. Maria Ressa, the executive editor of Rappler, was arrested following a complaint from a businessman linked to murder and trafficking humans and drugs. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. We're happy you are with us. Less than 2 months after being named acting U.S. Defense Secretary, Pat Shanahan made his first overseas trip this week, focusing on the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the details.
A second stop this week in an American military hotspot. Tuesday, Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan toured Iraq, where the United States has deployed more than 5,000 troops.
I wanted to hear firsthand from them about concerns the political dynamics that they're facing.
Monday, it was Afghanistan, where 14,000 U.S. forces are training Afghans and battling more than a dozen terror groups. Experts say the acting U.S. Defense Secretary needs to grow his foreign policy muscle after coming to the job with no military experience and only 18 months in government service.
The stuff that you really do look for your secretary to make decisions on in many ways, how to manage the bureaucracy to get things done, how to foresee national security issues two steps down the road. There, I wish there was someone who had a little bit more experience and interaction with foreign leaders before taking the position.
The U.S.-led coalition helped Iraqis push the Islamic State terror group out of Iraq. But American troops remain in the country to train, advise, and strengthen local security forces. U.S. forces in Iraq also have targeted remnants of Islamic State in Syria, and U.S. President Donald Trump has suggested they could stay there to keep a close watch on Iran. Acting Defense Secretary Shanahan heads next to NATO, where he will try to reassure partners worried about U.S. commitment to the alliance following harsh criticism by the American president. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Coming your way, more jobs is not necessarily good news. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has canceled plans to visit India this week for a business forum due to what a spokesman for his agency said on Wednesday was inclement weather and other logistical issues. The last-minute cancellation comes as tensions have risen between the two countries over trade and investment policies. This is VOA Asia. A new report finds the world's unemployment rate has dropped to 5%. That's the lowest level since the global economic crisis in 2008. The International Labor Organization reports the jobs being created, however, are of poor quality that keep most of the world's workers mired in poverty. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva at the launch of the ILO's World Employment and Social Outlook Trends 2019 report.
Slightly more than 172 million people globally were unemployed in 2018. That is about 2 million less than the previous year. The International Labor Organization expects the global unemployment rate of 5% to remain essentially unchanged over the next few years. The ILO report finds a majority of the 3.3 billion people employed throughout the world, though, are working under poor conditions that do not guarantee them a decent living. ILO Deputy Director General for Policy, Deborah Greenfield, says many people have jobs that do not offer them economic security, lack material well-being, and decent work opportunities.
These jobs tend to be informal and characterized by low pay, insecurity, and little or no access to social protection and rights at work. Worldwide, 2 billion workers, or 61%, were in informal employment.
Over the past 30 years, the report finds a great decline in working poverty in middle-income countries, but the situation remains serious in low- and middle-income countries. The report says one quarter of those employed there do not earn enough to escape extreme or moderate poverty. Regionally, the ILO reports only 4.5% of sub-Saharan Africa's working-age population is unemployed, with 60% employed. ILO Director of Research Damien Grimshaw says these good statistics are deceptive.
In sub-Saharan Africa, we find 18 of the top 20 countries with the highest rates of poverty, and they're also the countries with very, very high informal employment, so higher than 80% in most countries in sub-Saharan Africa, despite having some of the lowest unemployment rates in the world.
Grimshaw says the unemployment rate is not a good measure of labor market performance or economic performance in countries with high rates of informality. ILO experts also highlight the lack of progress in closing the gender gap in labor force participation. They note only 48% of women are working, compared to 75% of men. Another worrying issue is high youth unemployment. The ILO says 1 in 5 young people under 25 are jobless and have no skills. It warns this compromises their future employment prospects. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China said Wednesday a newspaper report that Chinese diplomats had held talks with Venezuela's political opposition to protect its investments in that country was fake news. The Wall Street Journal said the diplomats concerned about oil projects in Venezuela had almost $20 billion that Caracas owns Beijing and held talks in Washington with representatives of Juan Guaido, the opposition leader. This is VOA Asia. We're going to turn our attention now to American politics. Senators Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts are the latest Democrats to formally join the 2020 race for the White House. So far, 9 Democrats have either officially declared their candidacy or formed a presidential exploratory committee, and several more are expected to join that field in weeks ahead. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
I stand before you to announce my candidacy for President of the United States.
Among the latest Democratic contenders is Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, who hopes to build a base of support in the Midwest.
I don't have a political machine. I don't come from money. But what I do have is this. I have grit.
Also officially in the race now is Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Warren wants to bridge the economic divide in the country.
This is the fight of our lives. The fight to build an America where dreams are possible, an America that works for everyone.
Another early contender is New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, already busy on the campaign trail in Iowa and promising to heal national divisions.
Pull us together across party lines, racial lines, against divisions, and make sure that this nation again rises. Thank you.
I'm going to run for president of the United States.
The Democratic field includes several women and minority candidates and is already shaping up as one of the most varied in history, says analyst Elaine Kmark.
A lot of diversity in the field, which reflects what the Democratic Party is today. It's a pretty good field. I don't know who will manage to rise above the others, but so far it's a pretty solid field.
Most of the Democratic contenders hold liberal views on the economy, the environment, and social issues. And with so many new faces in the race, the candidates will be looking to set themselves apart early, says John Fortier.
I think the key candidates, the ones that do well, will have a constituency, either in the progressive wing of the party that is really fighting Donald Trump, or especially in the African-American community.
The candidate field may be diverse, but Democratic voters are likely focused on one unifying goal, says Larry Sabato.
When you get right down to it, what's the most important thing to Democrats? If I'm to believe what I'm hearing, and I do, it's that they want to pick the candidate who has the best chance of beating Donald Trump.
America is winning again. Isn't that nice?
For his part, President Trump is eager to bash the Democratic presidential field as too far to the left, as he did at Monday's rally in Texas.
Because the Democrat Party has never been more outside of the mainstream. They're becoming the party of socialism, late-term abortion, open borders, and crime.
More Democrats are expected to join the race soon, and the list could include former Vice President Joe Biden, 2016 contender and Senator Bernie Sanders, and former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke.
The
country's counting on us. Let's do it.
Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Our appreciation to you for joining us on VOA Asia. When Sarah Dwyer left a lucrative job in banking to spend a year in France, she had no idea it would give her an opportunity to fulfill a childhood passion. Almost 10 years later, the American entrepreneur has never been happier and is spreading that joy to her customers and workers alike with chocolate. VOA's Julie Tabo has the story.
And this is what we use to make our famous chocolate-covered caramels.
Sarah Dwyer has always loved chocolate, especially caramels.
When I was little, I used to like to squish them all in the box to find the chocolate-covered caramels. So I started a company that only makes chocolate-covered caramels.
That company is Chouquette, where almost 10 years in, Dwyer and her team are still making small batches of handcrafted caramels for a growing clientele. The idea for realizing her childhood passion came in 2009 during a year-long visit to France, where she decided to enroll at the Cordon Bleu Culinary School in Paris.
Once I started making everything in the pastry area, from a croissant to a chouquette, I loved it. And what I realized was that no one was making chocolate-covered caramels the way I loved them in the United States.
Dwyer uses quality chocolate from a California supplier, natural cane sugar, vanilla beans from Madagascar, and butter and sea salt from France.
All of those ingredients go in to making the best chocolates.
Her caramels come in 16 different flavors, each with their own design, and can be customized. She sells them online and in about 200 stores throughout the U.S. One of her most popular lines reflects iconic images of Washington, where she's based.
We took the five monuments that I love best in D.C. and made chocolates with those designs on top.
Another popular product is a series inspired by powerful American women called Phenomenal Women.
Everyone loves Oprah, so we said inspire by Oprah. We say win like Serena. We say go high like Michelle. Rule like Ruth.
Ruth, as in U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
The Rule Like Ruth set outsold every single holiday design.
But perhaps the sweetest and most satisfying part of her business is her staff, about half of whom have a range of neurological issues.
They're the best employees I've ever had. It is absolutely not a charity. It is the best business decision I ever made.
I think it's a great experience. Everyone here is very open, very nice.
It makes me feel good. I don't have to dread coming to work like I might somewhere else. It took me a few different jobs to land here. And I don't know, I just really like it here.
Dwyer's clients range from upscale hotels and major airlines to county fairs and local food markets. But no matter who she's making her signature chocolates for, Dwyer says she can't imagine doing anything else.
We're chocolate, we're caramel, and we're designs, but when you put them all together, it makes something magic.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Gaithersburg, Maryland.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in November 2018, scientists verified the discovery of a giant 31-kilometer-wide meteorite impact crater buried 1 kilometer beneath the ice sheet in northwestern Greenland. Scientists writing in the American Geological Union's journal Geophysical Research Letters are announcing the possible discovery of a second impact crater buried under more than 1.65 kilometers of the Greenland ice sheet. This newly found but unverified impact crater is thought to be even bigger than the first, with a diameter of about 36 kilometers. While the newly found crater was found a mere 183 kilometers from the previous discovery, study authors say that it appears the two formed at different times. Like the first discovery, this second impact crater was found beneath Greenland's Hiawatha Glacier and must be further studied before the finding can be verified. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We thank you so much for listening to VOA Asia. Our thanks for being with us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, John Ellison, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. Thank you to those listening on some of our affiliate stations, like the voice of Cheng Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chan Yung Christian University in Taiwan. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Have a wonderful day.